Meditating on the breath starts with two activities. One is thinking about the breath. And the other is actually watching the breath as it comes in, goes out. When you think about the breath, you don't just think once, you keep on thinking about it. In other words, you have to be mindful. Mindful means keeping something in mind. In this case, remembering to stay with the breath, that this is going to be your frame of reference, it's going to be the theme of your meditation. You've got to keep reminding yourself to do that because the mind so easily forgets. Its habit is to focus on something for a little while and then to focus on something else. Very easily slips from one thought to another. So part of the training here requires that you keep remembering, stay with the breath, stay with the breath. Keep that thought in mind. As for watching the breath, in the beginning it's pretty simple. Just watch it coming in, know when it's coming in, know when it's going out. And try to know when it's comfortable. If it's not comfortable, you can change it. This is where another quality comes in and builds on top of the alertness that you're trying to develop here. And that's evaluation. Trying to figure out what kind of breathing feels good. We may think it's strange to be analyzing in the meditation when we're often taught that meditation means not analyzing, but that's not the case. You have to evaluate. You have to provide the mind with a comfortable place to stay. Otherwise, it's not going to stay. It's going to go wandering off looking for comfort someplace else. And the most convenient way of making your body more comfortable right now is to adjust the breath, play with the breath, experiment with the breath. See what feels good, see what doesn't. You're trying to sensitize yourself here to something that ordinarily we're not very sensitive to. This is one of the many ironies in life, that things that are right next to us, right inside us, we often don't know, because we're distracted by things outside. As it happens, the further you get away outside, the less certain things become, and yet those are the things we seem to be most interested in. And we miss what's happening right inside us, right next to the mind. So change your focal point. Bring it right here. There are lots of ins and outs to the breath. You can make it longer, shorter, deeper, more shallow, heavier, lighter, faster, slower. And you don't have to exert physical pressure for this to happen. Just think. Next breath a little longer. And the body will breathe a little bit longer. Watch it for a while. Does it feel good? If not, well, try shorter. Deeper. And at the same time, notice what mental picture you have of the breathing. We have some cartoon ideas of how the body breathes. But it's a very subtle process involving the entire nervous system. The whole nervous system gets involved in the energy flow. And if you allow for that thought, it changes the quality of the breath. It goes deeper inside. Parts of the body that you might have shut off from the breathing process get allowed back in. This allows for a larger sense of ease to come from the breathing, which makes it easier to settle down. So this is just one of the ironies in the practice. The irony that something so near to us that can do so much good for us is something we tend to overlook. So our attention has to be pointed back. This is a theme that goes throughout our lives. We want happiness, and yet we so often do things that cause suffering. And we don't even realize that we're the ones that are causing the suffering. Partly because we're interested in other things, and partly because we're not very alert. And we're not very mindful. We don't see the connections between our actions and the results. This is why we need to be taught. You would think that we would know when we're suffering and we would know why, but we don't often. The why is the hardest part, but many times the actual suffering itself is something we miss. It's like someone who's used to living in a city and has gotten to the point where he doesn't even hear the traffic noises. It becomes so much a constant part of his life that he shuts them out. Only when you take a person like that out into the countryside, where there's no traffic, that's when he realizes he's been putting up with an awful lot of din. This is a lot of what the practice is about, helping you realize that a lot of the suffering that you carry around, a lot of the tension you carry around, is really unnecessary. It doesn't have to be there. And it points you to the fact that you are carrying it around. There's so much in life that we take for granted in the sense of a certain level of stress, a certain level of suffering, dis-ease. And we regard it as normal. And it is normal in the sense that it's a consistent part of your life. But it doesn't have to be there. And as we go deeper, there's a whole issue of the relationship between cause and effect. Many times the things that we do that create suffering will cause an immediate sense of weight or dis-ease, but they'll also cause longer-term problems. And we rarely see the connection between something we did in the past and what we're experiencing now. So again, this is why we need the teaching of a Buddha. There's one point where a nunna came to see the Buddha and said, this dependent core arising you're teaching, it seems complex, but it's really just clear as clear can be. And the Buddha said, no, don't say that. It really is complex. It's tangled, like a bird's nest or a tangled skein on a loom. In other words, the causes that go into our suffering really are very complex. Some come from the past, some come from the present. Even the simple way that you breathe. If you breathe in an ignorant way, the Buddha said, it contributes to your suffering. The way you relate to pleasure and pain, if it's done in ignorance, contributes to your suffering. The things that you pay attention to, if you do it out of ignorance, contributes to your suffering. There's lots. So much so that it's hard to know where to begin. So again, even though when the Buddha teaches, the basic principles of his teaching, the Four Noble Truths, suffering, the cause, the path, the end of suffering, and the cessation of suffering, these are things that can be immediately present. But we need somebody to point them out to us because we keep missing them. So even though the Buddha's teaching is about something you can see, and ultimately you do become the judge of whether the teaching is working or not based on your sensitivity to how your actions are leading to suffering or leading to the end of suffering. Still, you need pointers to begin with, where to look, what to do in order to see clearly, to be a good judge of how your actions are going. Take, for instance, the Buddha's teachings on stress and suffering. They're all things that are immediately evident, immediately apparent. But we tend to miss them. Some of the things we all know, there's stress in birth, there's stress in aging and illness and death. Getting what you don't want, not getting what you do want. But then the summary is something more subtle. He says the clinging aggregates, clinging to your form, clinging to feeling, perception, thought constructs, consciousness. This is what it all comes down to. And again, it's stuff that's happening all the time in the present moment, but we tend to miss it. So we need to develop our powers of mindfulness and alertness to see these connections and understand our duty towards suffering, which is to comprehend it, something we have a lot of trouble doing. Why? Because we tend to push it away, or we tend to run away from it. We're like a parent with a difficult child. We don't want to be bothered, and so we push the child away. Of course, that just creates more problems. We have to take the time to really look into, why does a child behave this way? That takes patience. It takes endurance. And patience and endurance are things that are many times hard to come by. It's the same with our own suffering. We'd just rather be rid of it. We don't want to do the work of sitting down and learning how to understand it, but the only way you can be rid of it is to understand it. So this is why we develop these practices of mindfulness and alertness to lead to concentration, because the concentration does give us a sense of ease, a sense of solidity, stability, that makes it easier for us to have those qualities of endurance and patience. We try to develop a sense of well-being that we can tap into when we need it, that helps us to endure. So we're not constantly obsessed with the idea that you're having to put up with something difficult. So the practice involves learning how to see. The duties with regard to the end of suffering are twofold. One is to let go of craving and to be aware of it as we're letting it go. In other words, we have to develop the qualities that allow us to see more clearly and to let go of the qualities that get in the way. Because it's our craving for things to be a particular way that gets in the way of our seeing of how things actually are. So these are some of the duties that we have that come from the Noble Truths. And this is why we suffer from these ironies, the irony of the fact that everything we do for the sake of happiness, but we often end up causing pain. The irony of the fact that the way out of that is to look very carefully at things that we're doing, things that are immediately apparent. And that we have to be taught how to look. We need someone to point out the way. That's what the Buddha does. He points the way. He says, look, this is where you look, right here. And this is how you look. You try to comprehend the suffering. You try to abandon the cause. And while you're abandoning it, you try to be alert to what you're doing as you abandon it. And you develop qualities of the mind that make it easier to be alert while you're abandoning things. You have to develop those qualities like mindfulness and concentration. Many of these duties go against the grain. Because we have our own ideas of how to deal with suffering. But many of those ideas, where did we pick them up? We picked them up when we were little kids, before we even knew how to talk. The pain of birth, the pain of just being hungry, the pain of all kinds of things that we did not understand. And so we developed an intuitive reaction to pain that we've carried around in our bones ever since. We have to unlearn that. even though pain is there. That's the chant we had just now. So many times we don't discern it. We don't really see it for what it is. So we're more interested in how to push it away or how to go for some pleasure in its place. It's because we take pain and pleasure as ends in themselves. Pain is an end that you want to avoid. Pleasure is an end that you want to go for. But the Buddha says, learn how to use them as means. The better you understand suffering, the more you'll be able to go past it. The more you use the pleasure of meditation as a path, the closer you get to a pleasure, to an ease that's even greater. But using pleasure as a path means not that you just go for it. It means that once the mind has a sense of ease, you try to use that ease to develop the patience and endurance you need in order to comprehend what the mind is doing that creates suffering. So all these duties work together. So we can finally, at one point, at least free ourselves from these ironies that we will act for our well-being and we'll actually produce well-being. And we'll be in a position where we can see whether it's working or not, because we've learned how to sensitize ourselves to the suffering that we're carrying around. We learn how to sensitize ourselves to the relationship between our actions and the results. In the beginning, it requires somebody to point these things out to us, but once we get the message, then it's up to us to put ourselves in a position where we really can be our own judge as to what's working and what's not. John Lee's example is of someone buying himself out of slavery. At first, you're a slave to your emotions, you're a slave to your greed, anger, and delusion. But you also have this way of developing your own inner wealth, the wealth of mindfulness, the wealth of concentration, the wealth of discernment. And through that wealth, you can buy yourself out of slavery. That requires patience. It requires dedication. The kind of patience and dedication we may not feel that we have in the beginning, but they can be developed. If you bring the proper attitude and if you bring the willingness to learn.